When you find out a popular entertainer is truly a rotten person, it's easy enough to cancel them when you're not really a fan of them in the first place. But when their work is super popular and speaks to so many people, including yourself, then it's not so easy. Co-creator of The Daily Show, Liz Winstead, feels the best way to deal with sexist music made by sexist people is to expose the truth with a snappy cover song.
In the new Lady Parts Justice League show, Liz is touring with some fierce musicians to take a look at some of the most sexist songs ever written. Today, the She-larious Liz Winstead joins us to look at cancel culture when entertainers are revealed to be harmful people. How has political comedy changed since she started The Daily Show on Comedy Central?
Plus, Kathy Griffin goes on tour talking about life after the Trump severed head controversy.
How to stand up for your beliefs as an entertainer.
And what does Liz talk about with her gal pal comedians like Sarah Silverman? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fierce, fabulous people like you. If you love the show, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
Our handsome men are cute and they're all terrific in a bathing suit. That's what I think about
men. That's what you think about men. Men.
What do I think about men? Oh, men are only naughty boys, and we to them are merely toys. They're always up to some new game, and the last analysis, they're all the same. That's what I think of men.
That's what you think about men.
Men, 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 men,
men,
men.
Hello.
Hi, is this Liz Winstead?
Who wants to know?
It's Fausto.
And Mark from Feast of Fun.
It's Liz Winstead on the line.
With an extra Z for zippy.
You know what? I am so zippy. That video you sent me was everything.
Liz, what do you think about men?
You know, I don't.
Men are simple. Dreamy, men are sweet. They simply knock me off my feet.
I mean, it was so interesting. And also, you know, it was fascinating because seeing Gloria Swanson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know she was only 50 when she did Sunset Boulevard?
She was like 52, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was like 52. Mm-hmm. And so to see her in that in 1980, she looked better. I mean, I know it was like a lot of dramatic lighting to make her look like some crazy disgruntled witch.
There was a bunch of women that turned down that role because they were just like, there's no way I'm going to play Norma Desmond. Mae West turned it down. There's a bunch of other people because they're like,
I would have loved to see Mae West play Mae West. Yeah.
And now, because 52 is old back then, huh?
But now, oh my God, now 52 is the new 51. That's fantastic.
Well, my mother's 94 and she says, you know, the 90s are the new 70s.
I know, right?
I mean, are we all just delusional because we're getting older and stuff? Or do we have different expectations of aging now than we used to have 50 years ago?
Yeah. I wonder about that. You know, it's interesting because with Viagra, with literally everything from the things that we don't talk about in life as women, like things that happen to your vagina after menopause and stuff like that. And now that there's like, you know, it's literally like, oh, wait, my vagina doesn't have to be some just dried out like cave that you excavate once a year at the gynecologist. It actually can be functioning and fun. And there's like medical stuff you can do. I mean, literally, mm-hmm. there's something called vaginal atrophy that is just as fun as it sounds. And
well, it dries out, and also, too, the lining of the wall gets a little thinner, or it tears more easy, right?
Yeah. Both. Yeah. And then and then intercourse becomes painful. Mm-hmm. But now there's stuff for that, where there didn't used to be. Mm-hmm. And so what I find fascinating is, you know, all those years where it would be like you'd see, like, older couples, and the husband would be just kind of a lech and, like, sort of, like, you know, skirt-chasing young women, and you're like, how was that woman putting up with that? And she was like, now I understand. She was like, just go fuck that young one. I don't want anything to do with it. Bring me diamonds. Take me on a cruise. It's fine.
Quit tearing me apart.
You're tearing me apart!
At the beginning of the video, we played Gloria Swanson, Brooke Shields, and Barbara Eden singing What Do You Think About Men? From a 1980s TV special. The number was trying to speak to what was known at the time as the Battle of the Sexes. And if you watch the video, you can see Gloria Swanson drooling over Woody Allen. It's just so interesting to see these big stars from the time apologizing for feminism, isn't it?
Totally. And it's like, and that's the whole thing about it. It was just like, you know, it's not unlike the counter narrative, you know, as we sit and speak in the moment we're living where, you know, Trump just doubles down more on Charlottesville and, you know, there's good people on both sides. It's like, it's not a war we wanted to fight. And is it a war if you just are asking for equality and asking to not be manhandled at our job? Or if we say no, if we are manhandled, we're not fired. You know, it's like when you think about what 1980 was, think about what 2019 is. Mm-hmm. It's so amazing to me how there is still apologizing for feminism. There is still that maybe we need to take some steps and think about the way that we talk to our oppressors so that they like us more. It's like, they're never going to like you more. No. If somebody is positioning themselves as an oppressor, no, no, no. You don't ask for what you deserve in a way that makes them feel good.
And you guys have this amazing supergroup called the Lady Parts Justice League, where you guys raise money, travel, and perform.
We're raising money, too, so that we can help. We travel around the country. We're out on the road about 4 months out of the year, and we do music and comedy shows in states and cities that are the hardest hit when it comes to reproductive access. And so we get really great headliners to travel around the country with us, do a show that brings 500 people into a room. And then after our show, we have a talk back with local reproductive health providers and the activists in that town. And then they talk about the needs in their city and state. And then the people who come to our shows can sign up and then grow the activist bases and grow support for the clinics so that we're helping them do local activism. And it's really fun.
And then during intermission, you can get an abortion if you want to.
Yeah, I wish. You know what? That would be amazing. But you can
smears,
get cool. You can get a pap smear. That's right. You can get a breast exam. I'm not saying they're. Or maybe it's just get fingered and have somebody touch your boobs. I don't know. Well, maybe that's what we're saying.
So the name of the show is Do Re Hashtag Me Too, a night of comedy and sexist songs performed by righteous women.
That's right.
And you guys are coming to Chicago here at the Metro on May 9th, and you're traveling all over the world.
I actually did come back from Berlin to a conference, but technically we're traveling all over the country.
You're like, all the different countries, America,
countries,
Germany,
America, other parts of America.
And you guys are sort of like, with all these really amazing musicians, sort of reexamining sexist songs and sort of reclaiming them.
I think, you know, part of how the landscape just got to be this world that we live in, so much of our culture and art has been created by men and has put out messages that are deeply messed up when it comes to either how you define women, how you define a role women should have, how you define how men should be able to have ownership over women. And there's songs that we have loved throughout history, songs that we have sung at karaoke, bought for ourselves, we know by heart. And so when you hear them laid out in an evening, it really is kind of great to be like, oh man, we have just tolerated a lot of stuff. And these songs have really just been part of the landscape of who we are and how we define what it means to be a woman. And also, it's cool to have really righteous women making songs and creating art that doesn't do that, perform those songs. So it's kind of like, hey, these cool badass people are also in the world singing amazing songs. You know, let's support them as well. So it's a good little reminder of how we celebrate art, what kind of art we have in the world, and how it really defines, you know, societal structures.
I always thought Van Halen's Hot for Teacher was a very polemic song about education.
You know, it really is. It is. Had we really just had Hot for Teacher examined more, I think that we wouldn't have gone with Betsy DeVos as our education secretary. I think we would have said, wait, I'm not hot for Betsy DeVos. I was supposed to be hot for teacher. Maybe we need to reexamine who we put in there.
I'm sure Betsy DeVos is attractive and beautiful to somebody, but her values and her ethics are ugly.
She is a boner. Yeah, she is the ultimate boner killer. I loved when she was on 60. I don't know if you saw it. She was on 60 Minutes like the beginning of last year.
I saw Randy Rainbow's version of that interview.
Randy Rainbow is my everything.
Yeah.
But so when she when Leslie Stahl was like, have you ever been in a public school? And she was like, uh-uh. And Leslie Stahl's like, well, maybe do you think you should? And she's like, yeah, maybe I should. You know, it was amazing. But my favorite part was she got so dragged on Twitter, and then she tried to have a comeback. And I can't remember where she posted the comeback, but she said, when someone said, did you watch the interview in its entirety? She was like, no, I have better things to do with 30 minutes of my time than watch 60 Minutes.
Why should she even do the show?
Do you got the time frame?
I know, but
30 minutes of my time for 60 Minutes.
Why is she dismissing the show?
But why? She is in charge of education, mm-hmm. and then she can't even get a math diss right. No. Everything about her.
Well, the queers all hate her because she was recently interviewed saying, you know, these things you outlined for transgender students is making it really hard for them. And she's just like, yes, I understand that. And just like so cold, no sympathy, no understanding, but just basically a big fuck you to everyone.
Well, Cruella DeVos, I mean, let's be real, that is who she is. And I know that's the whole thing. Yes, I understand what I'm doing to transgender people. They don't exist in my world or any world. I don't see that. You know, it's that kind of weird craziness. And, you know, I think especially for trans folks, every piece and every cabinet position has been trans and abortion are like the number one and two on their list of just oppressing their rights. When it comes to the Department of Health and Human Services and how we're going to deal with, you know, trans healthcare, when it comes to, you know, military, when it comes to education, you know, it's just like, it's just crazy. And to wake up every day and wonder, will I be allowed to have humanity today by my own government? It's like, is why we all have to fight so hard for all of our trans and queer brothers and sisters, because it's just a mess at this point.
Certainly with R. Kelly and Michael Jackson, not only are we sort of as a society having a really complicated discussion about music and whether it's even acceptable to listen to their music anymore, but it's just like, what do we do with a lot of this sexist music or music created by hurtful people? You know,
it's very, you know, it's a really an interesting cultural conversation that I wish we were having more, because I think it's really tough. And I think that for a lot of people, it's like, oh, like I was never an R. Kelly fan. So it's easy for me to go, don't listen to R. Kelly ever. He's garbage.
You don't like Trapped in the Closet?
I mean, Trapped in the Closet is, I mean, one of the most inexplicable things ever recorded.
Have you actually sat and watched the entire thing?
Twice.
I think it's actually really good. It's like a telenovela.
Okay, first of all, it is absolutely not good. First of all, that is, I feel like hanging up. Second of all, I really believed in you, and now I really have all these doubts. It's like
you have to understand, Liz, I'm coming from Puerto Rican culture, and melodrama and crazy twists to a plot is considered entertainment.
Look, I understand a telenovela, and I completely understand melodrama. What I don't understand is an opera where you're singing the stage directions. That is what, to me, that part was. And then I went to this, and then I took a step to the left, and then I went to the right, and then I walked towards the closet, and then I opened the door, and then maybe I wasn't gonna. It's like, stop already. I get it.
It does feel like a Saturday Night Live skit that's going on too long.
Well, I mean, just so much. And Bridget, all of it. I can't. Yeah. So that's a whole, breaking down R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet is sidebarring. But, you know, it's really hard. As a person who's an advocate for sexual assault victims, David Bowie, he has sex with underage people. You know, have I stopped listening to David Bowie? No. Like, you know, it's like, it's really complicated. And I don't actually know the answer. I really don't. And anybody who says they do, I kind of don't trust because it's just way too layered and complicated. I mean, how do you guys feel? Like, you know, I mean, R. Kelly is a blatant classic thing of like, it is children. It is, there is just countless accounts of it.
Again, like you, I'm kind of like, I was never a fan. Also too, I worked at Michael Jordan's restaurant when he was really big and that first case came out about him peeing on that girl. And so all the people I worked with were just like, oh my God, he's such trash. Don't listen to him. So I've always just kind of like not listened to him. And right. So it made it kind of like easy for me, you know? And so like that Trapped in the Closet song, I'm like, I watched I'm With You. I watched like 4 minutes of it. And I was just like, no,
it's comedy though. It's not, you know, it is. It's sort of like watching
comedy.
Yeah. And that's my favorite kind of comedy.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think the greater question is having a really, really important and many, many important conversations about cancel culture and what does it mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and as we come forward, you know, as we see this happen, you know, patriarchy hurts everybody because there's been such systemic, abuse and assault and harassment of women and queer people that it's so rare that someone makes it up. It's all levels of what has happened to someone are not created equal. You know, who is somebody who has been a serial douchebag and then when called out on it are willing to listen and do we want them to, if they've just kind of stepped in it or made a mistake or didn't know, you know, how do we keep redemptive qualities towards people who didn't know and want to learn from it when, you know, called mm-hmm. in versus canceling everybody because you made a mistake. I mean, if you're a comic or you're somebody who works in the creative cultural world, mm-hmm. I know there's probably art or something that I did that's out there in the world that somebody could drag up that it wouldn't occur to me to do again. I forgot I did it before. I would apologize for it and take it down if it was up or whatever, you know, but I just don't want to cancel out everybody, especially when people who are on amazing growth paths have shown that they aren't a person that they might have been 15 years ago mm-hmm. and then be like, oh, you did that, so you're done. I mean, that scares me.
So you're saying it's not possible to cancel a musician, and even if we do try to do that, we're sort of aligning ourselves with Puritans who want to cancel all music or all theater or all art.
I'm not necessarily saying that as much as I am saying, like, in the bigger meta conversation about these massive artists whose work we love have had questionable, you know, things. I mean, I don't know how you could ever listen to rock music or, you know, if you were going to cancel out every single person who's ever been a shithead or had groupies that were underage or did blank, like, I don't know what we do. We just stay home.
But isn't that the whole point of third wave feminism is sort of like taking sexist culture and either jamming it or reclaiming it or, you know, turning it on its head as opposed to letting it just define you?
I think taking sexist culture, but also even taking it to the next level is redefining sex. You know, like it was, you know, second wave feminism had a lot of like anti-sex work language, anti-porn language. And so, you know, reclaiming that and empowering people to be able to be clear in their sexual desires and their sexual choices so that we can stop living in a sexual space where, you know, I don't know how many times we've read in articles when somebody's come forward, like some guy has been defending himself against a Me Too accusation. And it's like, well, I was getting signals from her that I thought were positive. And, you know, she was giving me this body language that was this. And it's like, stop right there. The problem is women still feel that they that there's signals involved and that we can't use our words and language to either say, you know what, no, or I'm ready to go in without being classified as a whore or a prude or whatever. You know, if we could just be honest and verbal in the way we talk about all things in our sexual lives, I think we could avoid a lot of conflict. You know, it's so fascinating when you have sex with someone and you're like, ouch, you're on my hair, or no, you know what, I don't like it there, or that kind of hurts. Like, when you're in it, it's fine to say, why can't we just be in that all the time? Mm-hmm. You know, in constant dialogue. First of all, as I mean, speaking for myself, when I'm having sex, being verbal is really fun. Asking for what I want, more of that, less of that, let me, you know, like all of that to me, I feel like I feel lucky to be empowered to have those conversations. But if we don't give that into society and make that a way that feels organic to people, we're just going to wind up with people having bad sexual experiences mm-hmm. and crossing boundaries.
Well, and then, of course, you also have those incels, and look at what they're doing. I mean, the guy who went to a mall and women wouldn't talk to him, so he picked up a baby and threw it off the balcony. You know?
I know.
And then you had that other guy who shot up all those students because, like, girls wouldn't talk to him.
Right. Know? And then you have Jordan Peterson, mm-hmm. this crackpot professor in Toronto, being like, the reason that these men are like this is because they can't get laid. It's like, it's not my job to blow unfuckables mm-hmm. so that they have a better life. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. That maybe get a personality.
But yeah. there is somebody whose job is that. That's called a sex worker.
Yeah.
And then they make that illegal. So it's hard for them to, you know, to get that.
Yeah. But like, it's so incredible mm-hmm. to me to act like feminism mm-hmm. is the reason that these incels exist mm-hmm. or that, you know, now that women are, you know, free to decide who they want to have sex with, mm-hmm. it's hurting men who just would like to take the women they want to have sex with and have sex with them. Mm-hmm. Like, what?
It is interesting. And this is not just heterosexual men, but I hear, you know, trans men, gay men, a lot of people being like, nobody wants nice guys. You know, they just want guys that are going to hurt them. And I'm like,
they want the alpha males.
And I turned to the person saying this to me and I said, since when did you decide that you're the nice guy? Maybe you're the asshole.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And maybe the reason they don't want to have sex with you is because they're just turned off by you.
Also, somebody, you know, saying I'm nice, I'm funny, I'm hip, I'm edgy, self-proclamation of gigantic personality traits don't happen. You can't say that about yourself. Someone else has to say those things about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's well, I don't know. It's like a lot of rap music is all about fake it till you make it.
Well, so is Twitter.
Yeah, of course.
Well, do you think like the music industry may go or will go through sort of that change that the film industry has gone through in the light of Harvey Weinstein and the Me Too movement?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I would hope so. When you say the music industry, are we talking about rock music? Are we talking about jazz? Are we talking about, you know, like what, you know, it's like I think
like corporate rock mostly.
I mean, who knows? You know what? When there's just this profit bottom line, you know, there's always going to be people who protect bad behavior, people who scare people who are bringing bad behavior to the forefront away. You know, hopefully societal norms will change where, you know, wouldn't it be nice if like it was just like epically cool to be out there defending the people at the border and queer people and women and, you know, Black Lives Matter. I mean, like that shit's like really edgy and amazing, and to be profoundly on stage working towards stuff that's really cool and taking on the power structure instead of having it be edgy and cool to get 15-year-old girls drunk and have sex with them.
Well, Stevie Wonder, he wanted to do a lot of political music and music that sort of examined these difficult ideas, and his record label And Berry Gordy was just like, no, you have to sing about romance and love and all this stuff, relationships.
Mm. Right.
Because people wouldn't buy a protest song.
But, you know, you listen to some of Stevie Wonder's protest songs and they're brilliant. Yeah. I think now people are finding that they can be more. The good news is if people want to have their music be somewhat political or even just still in the vein of love relationships in the world, I think in their personal lives or where they choose to do benefits or mm-hmm. who they choose to align with, I think you're seeing a really big growth in that. I mean, I can tell you that 15 years ago, you know, managers and agents would say to me, you got to keep your activism like down low. You'll make people mad. And now someone's activism is just part of what they do and it doesn't hurt you. You know, Focus on the Family can't call up a network anymore and get somebody thrown off a show because they're gay or supporting, you know, LGBT causes or abortion rights or something. So that part of it is cool. So I feel like that's a really good turn that we have taken.
Well, with the show coming up, I imagine there's a lot of songs you guys are going to be performing or reclaiming. Are you guys gonna doing like the Crystals? He hit me and it felt like a kiss.
That is one of. Isn't that song just amazing?
You know, I saw a drag queen in the early 90s wearing that as a T-shirt. And I was like, where did you get that?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize it was a song.
It was a song. So I don't want to give the songs away because that's part of the fun.
Sure.
But what I will say is that there are songs that are from like from the 50s to now. So they cross from, you know, some Burt Bacharach into some Motown, into some rap, into some just like regular rock songs. And so it's a good mix of genre, which I really like also, just showing that. Because it's like, you know, when you look at culture and we start talking about like, oh, there's so much sexism in music. And it almost, when white people are talking about it, it almost will always go talking about rap and hip hop. And it's like, okay, we have to talk cross genre because mm-hmm. it's not one type of music. It is the experiences that we all have in all these different genres. And mm-hmm. there's lyrics that are terrible everywhere. From Cole Porter to Kanye.
So blurred lines with Robin Thicke. And
yeah, you know, you might hear some blurred lines.
When we think about the quintessential sexist song ever written, Baby, It's Cold Outside
gets yes. brought up.
And every, you know, you used to have like articles about the war on Christmas. Mm-hmm. Now it's articles about Baby, It's Cold Outside coming up every November and December.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's so amazing. I mean, the point in the song where it's like, what's in this drink? And you're like, oh my God, he's drugging her.
It's an annoying song. And mm-hmm. It's not like a song that I would listen to anyways. Mm-hmm. And part of it is like, the appeal of it is that it is a song about, a guy weaseling his way into having sex with a woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not letting her leave his house.
Yeah.
But does she really want to leave, though?
I think she does. At one point, she's like, my sister's worried. And he's like, I've locked her in the basement. I mean, he doesn't say that, but I guess the point.
Well, there was a guy on Facebook who had a little bit of a viral sensation when he did consensual Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Yeah. Consensual Baby, It's Cold Outside. That was amazing.
And like, I'll call you an Uber.
So he kept all the female parts of the vocals. And did the opposite of what the man yeah. is. It's like, there's really, it's just like, what's in this drink? It's like, nothing but 7-Up, you know, like. And so it sounds like that he's singing to this stalker mm-hmm. that keeps wanting to have sex with him. And he's like, no, please leave.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really good. And, you know, some of these, I mean, it's like between Kay Valentine and Kelly Hogan. And do you know who Jill Hopkins is? She's a Chicago.
She's a radio personality.
She's a radio personality who also has a 18-piece woman's orchestra.
Oh.
And yes, and she is the band leader for the evening. And so the whole 18-piece orchestra won't fit on the stage, but she's having a good hunk of this orchestra playing backup for all of the songs. And so it's really cool. So it's like a full-on thing. Yeah, so, and she's got an incredible voice.
I'm dying to see
this
show. It actually sounds, you know, when I'm looking at the posters and the press releases and stuff, it's really a tribute to sort of like these songs that are the epicenter of the demand for equality and women's liberation and
yeah,
more.
And it's fun too because I'm emceeing it and I come out between each song and I do a little explanation. Like I'll tell you, like one of the songs is "A Man Needs a Maid" by Neil Young. You know, and it's like
a man needs a maid.
A Man Needs a Maid by Neil Young. And so I'll come out and give a little history of the song and be kind of really sarcastic. Like, you know, if there's one theme in music that we have missed, it is a dirty Canadian man's experience with not being able to clean. You know, and so to be able to bring humor to the songs as well is like super important. So so I'm really excited about that.
Mark, you wanted to talk about Trump earlier?
Oh, about Trump. Oh, yeah. I wanted to about Trump. Let me pull up that tweet. So this is the tweet that's been making this round. He went in front of a rally and said, the baby is born. The mother meets with the doctor. They take care of the baby. They wrap the baby beautifully. Then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby.
Yeah, all the time that's happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Every minute.
And the crowd all booed, you know, because, you know, saying like, please don't execute babies. But I think we can all get on board with not executing babies.
I think Melania may have misinformed them.
Yeah.
I just feel like, and this is what's so, it's so crazy because as we're looking at the landscape of how they're legislating abortion mm-hmm. right now, they're trying to pass these 6-week pregnancy abortion bans mm-hmm. where people don't even know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. And then some states are codifying that if you have a pregnancy that is going to have fetal demise later and it doesn't develop until later stage of your pregnancy, or it will kill or drastically harm the person who is pregnant, states are wanting to make sure that those procedures are safe. Mm-hmm. And like for him to act like passing a law that says when you are going to deliver a baby, and this is what this is the thing, when he referenced that, it's because people, and this happens all the time, it's like if you're going to deliver a baby that you know is only going to live outside of the womb for, let's say, an hour or a day, you do palliative care as you would with anyone, right? Mm-hmm. And so making plans to have a baby and know how the family wants to spend their time with that baby that is going to die, how to make sure that baby is comfortable, how to nurture that baby in the small time it has on the earth,
mm-hmm.
Is so tragic to have to make those plans. And then for him to turn it into that at that rally, everyone should be outraged.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so gross. It is just so gross.
Well, the other thing too, it's like he's doing also just to intentionally mislead people. Like they're actually
yes.
out there believing because they believe everything that comes out of his mouth that, you know, these mothers and doctors are getting together and like, let's kill this baby.
Yeah. Cause you know, that happens. Cause you know what people do, after they've, had a pregnancy for 40 weeks,
mm-hmm.
they just want to decide they don't want to have it anymore and kill it.
Mm.
And also it's trying to conflate, you know, all of this stuff is happening at once, right? Between the 6-week ban and then creating this. So what it does is it creates a visual
mm-hmm.
for an uneducated person mm-hmm. to equate somebody who has to have a tragic later abortion with a mm-hmm. 6-week fetus mm-hmm. that is literally the size of half of a raisin.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this is just such garbage. And it's all about oppression. It's in its most terrifying of forms. And so that's why we're trying to fight back.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, my entire life I've been hearing people fight back against this kind of stuff. And I wonder, do you ever foresee an end in sight of being like, we've settled the abortion issue? Or will they always use this kind of bullshit to control people?
Well, it's interesting how there's a couple of answers to that for me.
Okay.
First off is unless we have men, women, people of all genders, understanding that bodily autonomy is the first line of your own self-determination
mm-hmm.
and that this issue is everyone's issue, it's going to be very hard to lose. They keep moving the goalposts all the time. You know, first they started arguing abortion on acting like it's all of these laws and legislation was to make sure that the pregnant person was safe. They want to make mm-hmm. sure it was safe. And then 2 years ago, there was a Supreme Court case that took on all of these laws that they were trying to do that were just roadblocks to get an abortion. And they said, none of this is about the person who's pregnant. None of this is about safety. This is about literally just entrapment and trying to shut down clinics. So then after that Supreme Court case, they have now shifted away, taken rights away from the women and the pregnant people and put all of the rights onto the fetus. And so now we are so fetus focused and it is literally deteriorating the rights of women and people who can get pregnant. And for me, I feel like as long as we have people who ignore the science of pregnancy and decide that these religious things can sort of factor into what's happening, we are never, I don't see an end to it. As far as we've settled it, it's fine. Because if somebody is saying that a fetus that is, if when an egg and a sperm come together, that has mm-hmm. as much value and rights and humanity mm-hmm. as a person walking the earth,
mm-hmm.
that is not based on anything other than their own religion dictating that to them. And I don't know how we change that.
Are there countries in the world that are doing it right? That this is not like a big issue that
oh
a woman can
God.
Have a safe abortion?
Yes. And
so who's
so
doing
many.
Who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong out there?
Okay, so number one country doing it wrong is us,
mm-hmm.
and Saudi Arabia, Bahrain,
sure.
You know, we're in league with some terrible, terrible people.
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing it right? England, Germany, France, Sweden. It's part of their national health plan. You don't have to go to a clinic. Every doctor can perform an abortion. You don't have to wait. You know, it's interesting because people will say, you know, they don't... In a lot of these countries, they don't have abortion unless it's to save the life of the mother after 24 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have the United States, any abortion after 12 weeks, most abortions happen before 12 weeks, like 90% of them.
Mm-hmm.
But in those countries, it's even more because abortion is so accessible and affordable. You know, so if people don't want abortion, that's not ever going to be a real thing because birth control fails. Sometimes you get pregnant and it fails. Sometimes your pregnancy that is wanted develops horrible anomalies later in the pregnancy and you don't know what's going to happen. So there's never going to not be abortion, but you can certainly reduce abortion
mm-hmm.
by having access to it early, access to medication abortion, access to birth control, education, but we don't invest in any of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you don't invest in things that prevent abortion, and you just want to end it, to me, let's really have a look to see then what we're talking about here. It's about shaming sexuality and it disempowering women.
Fausto's mom's friend, who's a communist, has a theory about why the right picked the abortion topic as a wedge issue. And she said it was because of so many Catholics belonging to unions and they were all voting Democratic and they figured abortion was a good way to get these Catholics to vote Republican and also to break down unions.
That's not even a little bit of a theory. That's mm-hmm. just real. That is
yes, 100%.
No, that is part of for sure the plan, you know, and it's just incredible how you manipulate, and it was poor Catholics, right?
Mm-hmm.
The hilarious thing about it is that 80% of Catholics use birth control, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I want to just start trolling Mike Pence because he's Catholic and he only has 3 kids. So what are you doing? I feel like you're not living your dream. Why were you not just keeping having sex all the time and having more babies? Are you using birth control, Mike Pence? Are you going against God? What's happening?
That's
What's
a really
happening?
Good one, yeah.
It's probably the rhythm method. That's what,
I mean,
that's what we were taught in Catholic high school, to take temperatures of the vagina and then figure out whether you're ovulating
of course.
Or not.
Yeah. But do you really think Mike Pence has any rhythm? He has not shown me that he has any rhythm whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And that Karen Pence, she just seems like she'd be a delight in the sack.
Mm. Now, Liz, you are the co-creator of The Daily Show that's still on the air.
Mm. Yes.
And you've had an amazing career as a comedian and a very prolific career. And you're also very outspoken politically. You talk about your own abortion that you had on stage. And I wonder if you've ever like experienced any kind of like pushback or been denied gigs or been fired from gigs because of being so outspoken politically.
I mean, yeah, you know, the second it's like, there's something I think happens, and I think that when you, but it's important to decide what you want your life and career to be. And so for me, it was when I realized that me as a whole person being on stage, and I told my abortion story a couple of times just in some like one person shows, and the amount of people coming up to me afterwards or people asking me if they could call me to talk about their own abortions because they felt alone. It was the first time they ever felt like they could talk to someone about it. You know, when I started having that experience and I realized me just being able to tell that story in these smaller rooms meant something to a lot of people, I had to take stock and say, this felt really good and felt really right to incorporate into how I am going to be in the public world. And then I knew that if I did that, that it was going to be, it was going to cut me out of some spaces, you know? And I made that decision for myself. So it was like, yeah, there was people that said, you can't talk about that abortion here. There was managers and agents that dropped me. There was people that said, that's too radical. Why are you doing that? You're going to alienate people. And I said, you know, and I said to them, you know, I don't, that's fine. I'm going to keep doing it. And I'm going to maybe alienate people, but I'm also going to bring new people into a space that maybe they haven't been before. And I don't know how it's going to land, but I'm going to do that. And I'm going to have an opinion. And even like with the Daily Show, you know, people before the Daily Show, I had so many agents and managers saying to me, don't be political. Nobody wants to hear political material. Nobody wants to hear political humor. You're cutting off a wide swath of the audience. And it's like being a woman on stage and deciding that I have the right to have an opinion and that it's worth hearing has cut off half the people. So I might as well say something that matters, you know? And so for me, I was like, I would rather just build an audience of people who like what I have to say, find it enjoyable, feel inspired to take action because of it, and really have them coming back and being participating in the world. So to me, it's worth it to cut out the garbage and then really service the people who want to hear this kind of stuff.
Well, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Kathy Griffin's last couple years of her life. She's right now touring and doing interviews about the setback that she had in the Trump, you know, bloody head scandal.
Right.
She said that it was one of the 100 things she did that day. Somebody brought some props to a photo shoot. She didn't think anything of it. And then all of a sudden the scandal exploded. And for the next 2 years, she was not even able to fly on an airplane.
I mean, excuse me. I feel like if you're at a photo shoot and somebody hands you a bloody head effigy of the president, you have to think about what that means. Like the fact that she didn't think about what that meant is astounding to me, right? The fact that you have a gig on a major news network and you were taking photos holding the bloody head of an effigy, you got to understand if that gets out, you're not going to be part of that news network anymore. You know, so those are decisions that I personally would have thought through and made peace with so that I could have had a really good talking points after it happened, you know, doubling down on it, feeling great. And I think that for me, I feel like it's so interesting in the world we live in now because, it was a setback for her but it didn't stop her. You know what? She's back out there again and she's doing it. And the monster that is Trump, grew into Kathy's artistic response of how she felt about him, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you talk about this with other feminist, other women comedians? Like, yeah, you're very close with Sarah Silverman. She's had some setbacks as well for being very outspoken as a woman.
Yeah. You know, and she's really good at self-reflection. You know, things that she has done in her past are things that she thinks. You know, she knows what she's saying and if she said something that she didn't quite understand would be perceived as harmful to a group of people when that wasn't her intention, she's the first person to cop to it. I think that in her being outspoken, knowing that people would be angry, she's well aware that there's going to be blowback for it. And I think that, you know, for me, the conversations are really prepare yourself for taking a stand as much as you can. Like nobody can really know how it feels to get a bunch of hate thrown at you relentlessly on the internet and in publicly until it actually happens. But really understanding that it's going to happen, taking some time to give yourself mental tools to put it in a place. Like I'm always like, when it's happened to me, and I look at the first, if I get a bunch of internet hate, you know, I'll click on the first 10 people who hate me and I'll look at their profile. And like I always say, if they're not feeding me, fucking me or paying me, their opinions are way at the bottom. Right. Yeah. And so it's like, they wouldn't like you no matter what. They have a MAGA flag and a thing and Trump riding an eagle and like every other opinion they have is something you find aberrant. Why would they not find you aberrant? You know, like it's like, of course, people coming at you are going to come at you with vitriol.
But part of that is like, you know, if you're a mainstream, if you're hitting the mainstream, you're appealing and building a career on a wide variety of people. And one thing I've noticed a lot when it comes to those setbacks that when we've experienced them, it's not harmful for somebody who's not fucking you or having sex with you or paying you, what really hurts is that that person's like, I was your biggest supporter and now you cross the line and I'm going to be your biggest enemy. And I just go, well, with fans like you, who needs enemies?
Well, that's exactly right. And that goes kind of in line with that sort of, you know, cancel culture where it's like, I was your biggest fan. And it's like, if you were my biggest fan, then hear me out. Tell me how you're feeling. Like, how could one thing I say, change all of that?
Because they weren't your biggest fan. They were just trying to align them. They were just trying to cash in on your success.
And also I would say too, it's like, I was your biggest fan, blah, blah, blah. It's like, show me where you downloaded my podcast every week. Show me where you've donated my nonprofit. Show me the ticket stubs for my shows. I highly doubt it.
Yeah. I always check my emails. Have I ever heard from you? Have I ever gotten a PayPal or a Venmo from you?
I'll start sweating at night. If a listener wants to really scare me to death, is when they take a Feast of Fun t-shirt and set it on fire.
Yeah.
And hello. I'm like, at least they paid for the t-shirt.
Yeah. Well, that was like, but also that makes me laugh because it's like those people that were boycotting Nike over Colin Kaepernick, they would take their own Nike socks and cut them up. And I was like, you realize that that does not affect the bottom line of Nike.
It helps.
Pay for the socks.
Now Nike's edgy.
Yeah.
Again, you know, and I'm like, there's nothing edgy about expensive tennis shoes that don't do anything special.
No, like, I completely agree.
The thing about it is like, I have like orthopedic tennis shoes.
Okay. I don't even know what that is.
Tennis shoes that have a higher cushion and a higher arch support that are designed for people with like bad feet and flat feet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and these are like about $100. And when I hear about people like, oh, yeah, man, I make minimum wage, but I spent $300, $500 on a pair of shoes. And I was like, these are friends of mine. And I'm like screaming at them. Why are you doing this? And I just can't get through to them.
Also, you don't run. You're not an athlete. You're not even walking a lot.
No, this is like, you know, retail store, you know, millionaires, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, baby, you know, save this money for your emergency, for your down payment for your home, or, you know, it's just to me, and I noticed this when you go like tune into Fox News because you're forced to at the airport or something. They're always like, well, poor people own refrigerators. Are they really that poor?
All the time. I mean, that's the whole thing that really drives me insane is that when we talk about poverty, there is apparently poor people aren't allowed to have nice things or eat a nice meal. Or it's always like, if you're poor, you should be cooking every meal from scratch at home. And you should be only wearing hand-me-downs. And you should be blah, blah, blah. And it's like the fact that we have relegated poverty to a character flaw in this country and to you as a bad person makes me feel really upset.
Well, it's a regressive behavior, right? It's somebody likes to tell other people what to do. And it also is their value. Their lives are diminished when they see somebody else having the same thing. So it's not enough that I have a $500 pair of sneakers, but when I see somebody who isn't as well off or is relying on government assistance buying a $500 pair of sneakers, I start wanting to shut down welfare because I'm mad that that other person has what I have and it makes my uniqueness not so special.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
This is not just Republicans. These are also Democrats.
Oh, no.
This is the Joe Bidens of the world, you know, and Joe Biden is now in the running. And it's very interesting to hear the way the news media is sort of talking about Joe. Right. They're like, Joe Biden raised more money than any other Democrat on his first day of announcing being president. I'm like, yeah, because you're basically taking corporate donations.
Mm. Yeah, it's also America wants change. So Bernie and Joe, I'm like, oh my God, really?
How do we unite the Democratic Party for this next election and at the same time not disenfranchise progressives?
I mean, that's a super big question, right? I mean, I think that, it, you know, right now we have 18 months till we have an election. And I feel like people need to be examining who these candidates are, who they like, really saying out loud what you like about each person or what you don't like about each person, instead of saying, I hate that person, I would never vote for that person. Mm-hmm. It's like, I like this person, but I like this person more. You know, grabbing the ideals of all of them so that when we understand that we have to pick a candidate, that what we've done is say, no matter what, this candidate is better than this fucking the Night King who is occupying the White House right now.
Well, who are you rooting for? Who's getting excited?
So when you say rooting for, I'm rooting for someone to beat Trump, A. Mm-hmm. But B, who do I like? I mean, to me, Elizabeth Warren is the best candidate in the pack. Mm. Like, I love her. I love her policies. I love her. I think she's the smartest person. I think she's the most caring across the board. I think she's, incredibly brilliant on economic issues. I think she's incredibly in tune with, issues of income inequality. I think she's great. So she's my favorite person right now. And I think that we have to start looking at our favorites and trying to figure out how, we help them beat Trump instead of saying they can't.
What do you make of Pete Buttigieg? Because it's kind of, it seems kind of strange, like this gay guy just popped up out of nowhere and people are really looking at him very, very seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun because we did a show in South Bend, Indiana, because there's a clinic there that we were trying to get open. Mm-hmm. And he's really good on choice issues. And his mom came to our show, and that was really fun. So I met his mom last summer. I mean, here's the deal. It's pretty cool to have this guy running who's gay and having his partner be part of his life and just really openly talking about that. You know, it's people really like that he's reclaiming religion in a way that we haven't seen progressives mm-hmm. be successful at doing. Mm-hmm. I think it's exciting to have him in the race, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have a white guy in the race, I like to have a queer guy who's married, who's like bringing something new. You know, I feel like maybe from mayor to president, maybe you could work on becoming the senator from Indiana mm-hmm. or the governor of Indiana. Mm-hmm. Indiana needs you profoundly. And I'm wondering if his getting himself to with this elevated platform, it may be, and saying running for governor of Indiana isn't going to get the nation and create this big stir to show who you are to the state of Indiana mm-hmm. The way running for president is. Right. And so my hope is that he's using this as a platform to elevate who he is so that maybe he can run for one of the Senate seats in Indiana or can mm-hmm. run for governor of Indiana to really help reclaim what's going on in Indiana.
Well, that's the thing with Elizabeth Warren is that she, of all the candidates, is the one with the most specific policy ideas.
Yes.
Whereas yes. Buttigieg is very shying away from policy discussions at this point in the race. And I'm kind of like, baby, if you want to get ahead, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what, because some people are saying that Warren should be more popular than she is, considering how good she is as a candidate. And part of it is they're saying that what's hurting her is her ability to present solid policy ideas.
Well, and I wish that there was just more of a infrastructure throughout our media that would allow not just these weird town halls that are on cable news, but like more ways to slur who they are, yeah. You know? And well, it's just, I think, feels
Alexandria
to me like
Ocasio-Cortez is the queen of that, you know, and it's,
oh, she's
it's
so good.
I absolutely adore seeing her live streams that, you know, she's just making dinner and just talking. And you're like, this is the president I want. I mean, not yes. right now.
Well, she's not. She's too young, right?
She's too young. Yeah. And she, you know, let that ham bake in the oven a little bit longer before we eat it.
But really great, you know, and I love like her putting together her IKEA furniture and her being like really open about like, wait, I have student debt. Wait, are you mad at me? Oh, I see. I can't have a nice suit. Go to hell. You know, she just takes it all on. And I just feel like, too, it's, you know, there's four women from the United States Senate who are running for the presidency, and we just don't hear from them enough. You know, there's so much focus on Bernie and Biden and Pete Buttigieg, and that's fine. But like, oh my God, let's talk about people who have had a lot of experience as well. And I just can't wait till the debates start.
It is interesting, even like in terms of like podcasts and blogs that discuss politics, it really is still like a man's world in that sense. And I want to hear more feminist voices, more diverse voices in talking about the political election. And the trouble with it is like, you know, especially when it comes to LGBTQ people on social media, on Facebook, it's my way or the highway. There's like a lot of velvet rage manifesting itself in the way we talk to each other about our political passions.
Yeah.
And you know, I see a friend of mine posted this. It was like, can the 2020 election be over with already? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, baby, this is the future of your life. You know, you better
take
fight
it seriously. You know,
it's
this is not a grinder date. You can't swipe right on this.
No, I mean, that's the whole thing, is that this is our lives now. Politics is always going to be incorporated into our pop culture, our choices, our thing, you know. It's like all of it, it matters now. It never goes away. And so how do we integrate it where we don't get burnt out and we don't go, oh my God, make it be over. You know, we have to think about that as citizens. Like, how do I want it to go? Do I want it to be for 2 years before that I'm inundated with these people who are, and then nobody really cares for the last 6 months anyway? You know, why don't we go more like they do in England, where it's a much shorter time frame, forcing people to have to learn about who these people are? Because also people, I don't think, really get even how, thanks to our shitty-ass media, you know, like Mueller report, 24/7. But like, what's happening in the Department of Health and Human Services, in the Education Department, with our environment, climate change, the rules and regulations that are being laid down that are hard to reverse by this administration are terrible. And there's not a really easy resource to find that stuff out. And I think people would be really excited to be able to have a podcast or something, or have the news shows start focusing on other stuff that's happening.
I'm kind of obsessed with Paula Deen's podcast.
Oh my God, what?
Yeah, so she's you know, she's trying to make a comeback. I mean, she's going to be,
well,
trying
everybody
to make
a has
comeback.
A podcast now. You
everybody,
know?
But Paula Deen's podcast, all it is her crank calling her fans.
Well, she's just calling them.
She doesn't tell them that she's going to call them. That's the best part of it. So it's like, hey, it's Paula Deen, butter, you know, and the person on the other line's like, what? Are you really Paula Deen? Like, that's every episode is like, this isn't Paula Deen, is it? Is it Paula Deen?
What's going on with Bubba these days? Yeah. Oh, Bubba's fine.
He's over there in the kitchen right now. He's making himself a Frito pie. Blah, blah, you know, it is so insane.
Yeah.
It's completely nuts. It lasts 15 minutes, so it's a perfect little pick me up on your coffee break at work. And you can learn more about how Paula Deen scares people.
You know what? I feel like I'm just going to let you tell me.
Yeah. It's not something you want to like put on your phone or anything, but it's a good for a laugh or two. And I was like, you know, this is an idea that we might want to start doing, is just crank calling our fans.
I mean, you should. I mean, I would listen to that rather than Paula Deen calling up and saying, like, countdown to Paula Deen using the N-word seems like not that fun to me. Like, it's terrifying.
Yeah. But, you know, butter is everything.
Always. You know? I feel bad for the people who can't eat it.
Do you cook with butter a lot?
Yes.
When was the last time you had butter?
She's from Minnesota. Of course she uses butter.
When was the last time you had butter?
The last time I had butter was yesterday.
Oh, not today.
Have you ever seen the butter heads at the Minnesota State Fair?
Okay, are you ready? Not only have I seen the butter heads, on the Daily Show, I did a piece on the Minnesota State Fair, and I got to sit inside the rotating butter. It looks like a butter phone booth where they carve the Princess K of the Milky Way is what her title is. And so I got to interview one of the butter princesses while they were carving her. Mm. And she was in a down parka because it's freezing in there, and I was in like a tank top.
Can you explain this to me? So is this like a 3D printer where they're building a dress made out of butter around a person? Or
no, they have a brick of butter, and they carve. It's like chiseling a bust of the candidates, the butter princesses, who are vying for the title of Princess K of the Milky Way. It's from Minnesota 4-H. Mm-hmm. And I asked her if you could be lactose intolerant and still be Princess K of the Milky Way. She didn't know.
So it's like a huge block of butter, though. Like, these are like the head on, you know, the bust is like their actual size, basically.
But
right?
Liz, who are you actually talking to? Is the sculptor that's carving
this? No, I was talking to, the sculptor was carving her, the princesses.
A statue. Mm-hmm.
A bust.
An inanimate object.
A butter statue.
Okay. And so the conversation is very lively.
He's carving the butter.
Okay.
And I'm interviewing the subject that he is carving.
Oh, I see. So it's the idea is to replicate somebody's likeness into butter.
Yes.
The princess.
Oh, yeah. I see.
And you're inside a refrigerated glass box, right?
That rotates.
Why is it rotating? So people can see it.
Yeah, because all of the butter, once the butter, each butter sculpture is done, they're at the base of the rotating clear glass thing so that you can see all the sculptures.
You know, I'm from Puerto Rico, and growing up in the 80s.
You keep dropping that. Well, like you're Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I've been compared to him, but I say better. He and I both have this shared experience is that we think of air conditioning as a very luxurious thing. We're fascinated by it. Kind of like Imelda Marcos. Have you ever heard the story? When Imelda Marcos and her friends used to buy fur coats and then crank up the air conditioning.
No, she had she had a refrigerated room.
She had a refrigerator. That's what it was. A room.
Her friends could wear their fur coats at the party
and hang out, right? Mm-hmm. And look, sophisticated. And when I hear about a spinning refrigerated theater where you can sculpt butter, I just get really excited.
No, let's just break it down for even more five more seconds, right? This is why America is just a monster. Because first of all, we've created an air conditioned case for our dairy princesses to be in.
Yeah.
But second of all, we've also decided that there's just so extra food in the world that we can carve bricks of butter and make statues out of them.
Don't they melt it afterwards and have like a pancake breakfast? I think they do.
They don't waste
that
butter.
I'm sure they do. You know, I have to tell you that I went to, years ago, like 20 years ago, I went to the Ohio State Fair, and they had carved out of butter the heroes of the Gulf War, and people were walking around it openly weeping. Like, they were weeping at the butter sculpture of the heroes of the Gulf War. It was intense.
No one's, like, sculpted, like, a vagina out of butter or
I'm
something?
I'm sure they have.
Oh, we have. No.
Yeah.
We have.
A hole.
We have done vulvas.
But a
vulvas
nice
and uterus.
Like a Judy Chicago dinner plate kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that all butter should be served that way. It's pretty.
And spread it on toast. And you're good to go.
Spread it on toast. Vagina on toast. Let's do this.
Liz, it's so good talking to you.
I love y'all so much. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe I've not done this podcast for 2 years.
I know.
What?
I think
we can do this every week,
Come back on anytime.
I can talk to you all the time. I love it so much.
I feel like the last time we talked to you, you were putting Tabasco sauce on your dog's poop so your dog wouldn't eat the poop. How'd that work out?
My dog is now dead.
Oh my God.
So it works. It doesn't eat poop anymore. But I have another dog that that I have to clean his penis. He's 16. He can't reach his cock, so I have to clean it for him.
Well, how does that what does that entail?
It entails me having a special cock wash that I got at the vet that costs $260 a bottle.
I didn't
and
know.
And then they make dog cock wash. It's true.
Wow.
That's not poisonous to the dog if they eventually can reach their cock.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to take a little swab and then clean around it, because if you have smegma on your penis, it can back up into crystals into your urinary tract and give you all kinds of grief.
Should I be worried about this with my dog?
You should. Well, only if your dog starts like extra peeing or peeing inside your house. But this is what the vet said to me, which is just unbelievable. Hmm. So when they go, because I took the dog. First of all, I took the dog to the vet. I'm sidebarring so hard on your podcast. I took the dog to the vet like 6 times because it was having urinary problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 7th time, when they were told me I had to like have this really expensive ultrasound to find out what was wrong with the dog, then they took the dog in to shave the dog to the ultrasound. And as I was leaving, she pulls me back into the room and she goes, "Oh, we've identified the problem. Your dog has smegma all over its penis." And I said, "I brought my dog in here 7 times and you've never looked at his penis for his urinary problem?" And she said to me, "Some things are the owner's responsibility." And I'm like, I don't stare at my dog's cock. I just don't. I don't.
Oh my God.
Like, I feel like it's your responsibility.
You should have slapped her.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that like if it's a urinary problem, they would actually look at their urinary organ.
You'd think, but then she sells me this cock wash, and the only thing good is that at least there is a cock wash, because she could have said, "You're going to have to lick it for him because some things are the owner's responsibility."
The cock wash.
It's a reboot of car wash.
Yeah, it's a blue cock wash. It looks very much like that Kiehl's astringent, but it's twice as expensive.
Are you
excited? Cock is shiny like a new dime, so it's good.
You just soap and water wouldn't work?
No, because, if they lick the water, if they get to the cock, the problem is it has to be a hypoallergenic thing that if for any weird reason he could make it down there, he wouldn't poison himself by licking it.
Oh, so it has to be something safe that he can also consume.
Yes, he's TMI. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, thank you for that.
Sure,
I do appreciate your discussion.
I'm here to help.
We're going to rename it Feast of Hunter, Feast of Veterinary Care.
Feast of Cockwash. I like it.
Mm. Cockwash is a t-shirt. It's a brand. Can you turn the bottle into like a t-shirt logo or something? Or?
Oh, you know what? No, it's super boring because it's like good for dogs and horses. It's like a super boring logo.
Oh, there's a woman that makes a ton of – I was reading an article. She makes a ton of money by cleaning horse cocks.
Yeah,
because it's an expensive process. Yeah, it's a big business for her.
It's a living.
Like you
it's
said,
it's a living. True.
Well, let's come back sooner than 2 years, please.
I promise I will, and thank you so much for supporting Lady Parts Justice League. And come to our show in Chicago at the Metro May 9th, y'all.
Honey, I'll meet you in your dressing room. We can wash your dog's dick.
I'm also in town for a week, so if you guys have any time to like have dinner and hang out, So let's do it.
Okay, for sure.
I'm doing it. How long are you going to be in Chicago?
I come in the 4th.
Oh,
and
wow.
I leave the 10th.
Okay, I'm writing that down here.
Let's
count it, honey.
Let's do it.
Yeah, come back on in person.
Studio. We're up in Andersonville.
Posh studio. People are like shocked. They're like, "Oh my God."
We're 10 minutes away from the Metro.
That sounds perfect. I totally should. And we'll totally set it up. So just like text me and you guys figure out some times that you're available.
All right.
Liz, adore you.
Love you guys so much.
Love you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, thanks.
Liz Winstead lives in New York City. Lady Parts Justice League is coming to a town near you, and they're going to be in Chicago at the Metro Thursday, the May 9th at 8 p.m. Do Re, hashtag Me Too, a night of comedy and sexist songs performed by righteous women.
Mm-hmm. She didn't want to tell us what they were, so it'd be a big surprise.
I don't think she knows.
She probably knows.
They won't tell her. They're like, we're not going to tell you because you're going to spoil the surprise.
People will be like, that's my favorite song and you're ruining it.
Liz is like one of my favorite people, and she's such a brilliant comedic and political mind. And you know, you guys love The Daily Show. She's one of the people who helped make it.
Yeah, and I totally appreciate her dedication to people's rights and women's rights and people's rights to health care.
Amen, honey. Girls, like,
there's so many people out there, especially with this next election, we're seeing people who are just like, Medicare for all won't work here. We could never do it. We're too big. We're too this. We're too that. And there's just so many naysayers. And you just look at the rest of the world that's, you know, from these developed countries, and they're doing it. And yes, there are some problems with it, but you know, it can be done.
I know. It's like one day I went to the doctor. And I was like, I have a tickle in my throat. I have a little case of cock throat. And he's like, oh, no, you have strep. We have to do a full STI and strep screening, blah, 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 you know. And, of course, like, it was all negative the next day. And then I got a whopping bill, like $250 and stuff. And I have health care. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is some of the biggest issues, you know. And when we talk about, like, fighting the AIDS crisis and fighting HIV and AIDS, we are really talking about giving healthcare to everybody. Because if you want people to get tested, if you want people to, you know their status, the only way to do that is to make it accessible to everybody. And not everybody can get an STI or HIV screening affordably in their neck of the woods. And if sometimes you do, if they don't bill it right, you're basically like having to decide whether to pay for food or pay for your medical bills. And that's part of the way that they control people in the United States. You know, it's not fair. It's not right. And that's why we need to work as hard as we can to have somebody who's progressive win the Democratic nomination and defeat Trump.
And we need to support the people that are working towards that. And so, you know, if you get a chance, go see Do Ray, hashtag Me Too. I think it sounds like it's going to be really a lot of fun.
And basically, they're giving the night away. It's $25 for SRO tickets, $30 for seated tickets. You can get it at lpjleague.com. If you don't treat yourself, you cheat yourself.
I also want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't be able to talk to fantastic people like Liz Winstead if it weren't for you and your support. Again, you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus, or you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
I couldn't set it better myself. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.